If there are any heavens, my mother will, all by herself, have one. It will not be a pansy heaven, nor a fragile heaven of lilies of the valley, but it will be a heaven of black-red roses. My father will be deep like a rose, tall like a rose, standing near my, swaying over her, silent, with eyes which are really petals and see nothing, with the face of a poet, really, which is a flower and not a face, with hands which whisper, "This is my beloved, my..." Suddenly, in sunlight, he will bow, and the whole garden will bow. E.E. Cummings. Part 1. Chapter 1. There were many things about Elizabeth Ferguson that the people of Bayview disliked. They thought her tall, too thin, too aloof. Her neck was too long, and her breasts were too big. The men who could have lived with the size of her breasts found her unwilling to flirt and labeled her cold. The women were jealous of how well her clothes hung on her and that she managed to look elegant in outfits that would have made them look like the bag ladies of late autumn. She said little in town, unless spoken to, in which case she had the gall to be civil and clever. They distrusted her because her husband and parents were dead and because she called herself Elizabeth instead of Lisa or Betsy or Liz. In a town where the sole taxi driver delivered pints at breakfast to a dozen people, a town where alcohol was the cornerstone of all civic and social endeavor, they did not like that she could drink so much at the bar without becoming sloppy or degenerate. They found it alarming when, in the market or the bookstore, and for no apparent reason, she burst out laughing. She might have just remembered the eccentric horse in the Saki story who has what its owner called the swerving sickness. But the people of Bayview could not guess this and took these abrupt outbursts to indicate that she was slowly going mad. They resented that Andrew Ferguson had left her a comfortable trust and they blamed her for his death. However, she had managed to cause him to crash, while drunk, 3,000 miles away, they knew she had done so for the money. And what they especially didn't like was that a week after he died, a man had left the Ferguson house at 7 in the morning. Old Mrs. Haas, in the breakfast nook of her Victorian across the street, had watched through binoculars as the man left and had had to suppress her gleeful outrage until 9 when she began making phone calls. Rosie Ferguson was 4 when her father died. As she sat on her mother's lap at the crowded Episcopal service, she knew that her father was dead, but kept waiting for him to join them in the first pew, wondering what he would bring her, a book maybe, or taffy. She hoped for the cinnamon kind, the prettiest, pink with a glassy red stripe. Several days before he had left for the East Coast, she had cut off the legs of all his suit pants at the knees, but she had forgotten this by the day of the service. She stared at the stained glass, the crucifix, the candles, the flowers, the man on stage in a black dress. Spellbound, she bit her bottom lip and appeared to be getting a feel for it all before doing some interior decorating. Elizabeth held Rosie on her lap, dimly aware that her daughter was trying to take care of her. Rosie kept patting her and smiling bravely, but Elizabeth couldn't concentrate on what was happening. It was too surreal. Andrew's now permanent absence, her presence in church for the first time in years. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Over the minister's voice, she heard Andrew reading to Rosie the night before he left. "James, James, Morrison, Morrison, Weatherby, George, Dupree." Saw Rosie in the closet with the scissors, black curls flattened on one side after a nap, Siamese blue eyes squinted in concentration, cutting